Thank you, Philip. Good morning again, everyone. If you've been to Bible class, then you know that we've been going through Isaiah for the last month and a bit. And I don't know about you, but Isaiah is a book that I love. I don't always get it right when I look at it and try to put things in its place. Because it's a big book and it's filled with beautiful language. It's filled with amazing images of the future, but also an amazing story that happened during Isaiah's lifetime. So Isaiah has such a lot to give. It fills gaps of history and it expands on them. It goes into detail about prophecies and has prophecies about other nations, especially as well. So Isaiah is so vivid, the language so powerful, and especially the return of the exiles. There simply is a lot of the book. And so it's just right for us to maybe go and carve it up when we try to study it, to analyze and wrestle with the message or messages we find. And so we've been doing just that at our Bible classes in Reading over the past few weeks. We have been looking for kingdom visions in the first part of the book to see what Isaiah was shown and how he put this into words for us to understand. This is all good, but my mind sometimes trips up when it is confronted with too many facts and insights. It takes one of those facts and goes chasing it down a rabbit hole. It makes for a good Bible study, but not always good for then wanting to give feedback or to whoever tried to give the talk. And in a way, all our Bible study is always focused on one aspect or another. One of the challenges then is to not lose sight of the big picture, you know, the one where we can see all the detail, where we can see how it all fits together, but maybe sort of then lose sight of the specifics. Some books in the Bible lend themselves more to this than others. And so Isaiah is a fascinating one. There is so much of it, as I keep saying, that you are easily sucked into the detail. And yet, at the same time, we may want to visit, to just sit down and read Isaiah from beginning to end. And so then get drawn into the world and time of the prophet. It's a good book to do this. Isaiah lived in interesting times. The start of the book is telling. Isaiah chapter 1, verses 1 to 3 reads like this: "The vision concerning Judah and Jerusalem that Isaiah, son of Amoz, saw during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Hear me, you heavens. Listen, earth, for the Lord has spoken. I reared children and brought them up, but they have rebelled against me. The ox knows its master, the donkey its owner's manger, but Israel does not know. My people do not understand." Isaiah finds himself in an end time once again. The end is nigh. That's something I mostly associate with Jeremiah. But then that's because Jeremiah wrote about the end of temple worship, the end of the kingdom of Judah, of the impending exile. Isaiah's time had a different end time. He saw the bad end of a king who had started well, Uzziah. He saw the end of Israel, as in the northern kingdom. One of the key baddie nations of the Old Testament, the Assyrians, were the major threat to any surrounding nation. And Isaiah sees them take the northern kingdom and also how they nearly make an end of Judah and Jerusalem. And it had been each and every prophet before and also since Isaiah who kept pointing out the key issue. Israel does not know nor understand their God. The end is nigh because nobody is interested in sound advice. How could this God prevent the inevitable decline from happening? What good would it do to go and actually worship in, spirit and truth? Instead, Isaiah has to say the following in Isaiah chapter 1, verses 13 to 17. Stop bringing meaningless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me. New moons, Sabbaths, and convocations, I cannot bear your worthless assemblies. Your new moon feasts and your appointed festivals, I hate with all my being. They have become a burden to me. I am weary of bearing them. When you spread out your hands in prayer, I hide my eyes from you. Even when you offer many prayers, I am not listening. Your hands are full of blood. Wash and make yourselves clean. Take your evil deeds out of my sight. Stop doing wrong. Learn to do right. Seek justice. Defend the oppressed. Take up the causes of the fatherless. Plead the case of the widow. Isaiah, just like so many parts of the Bible, doesn't read like an ancient text. We humans have always been facing the same issues: greed, self-righteousness, a disregard of our neighbor. The worship in the time of Uzziah had turned stale. The warnings of Isaiah, Hosea, Micah, they didn't bring about a change in heart until it would get much, much worse. Uzziah's son, Jotham, is hardly mentioned in the Bible. So he can't have been much of good or bad to his credit. So he clearly didn't make things worse. Sometimes that's all you can be thankful for. It seems that appeasement was the key driver, and that maybe was Jotham, that maybe Jotham wasn't so good at that either. It seems that his son, Ahaz, took over the reign while Jotham was sidelined. And with Ahaz, one of the worst kings of the kingdom of Judah would take place. Is this a good time to have a moment to reflect how this compares to us and our time? It's difficult when you find yourself living in interesting times to know if and how you may want to react and respond to current events happening all around you. Good leaders are clearly being sought out, but as soon as the new hopeful wins the election or is appointed, they turn out to be similarly unable to truly bring unity and hope to the people. Aren't we all constantly looking for a Messiah? One who can sort out the mess we so easily find ourselves in. One who actually knows what to do and how to do it. Someone who will improve my life. I suppose Ahaz thought he was doing the right thing when he aligned himself with Assyria, when he began worshipping their gods, going so far as to burning his own sons as an offering. Ahaz thought he was doing the right thing in the eyes of the Assyrians, in the eyes of the advisors who told him to be realistic and to not just sit there and pray to a god nobody had ever seen. The temple worship, if it still existed, was a faint memory of the times of David and Solomon when the glory of God had actually been encountered. That had not been seen in a long time. And yet, here is Isaiah, the one who cried out, "Here I am, send me." Isaiah seems to have been involved in temple worship. Maybe Ahaz couldn't care less, but there certainly were those who did care a lot for God, and Isaiah was right there. He had access to the royal palace and was able to speak directly to the king. He was right there when God sent out warnings and words of encouragement. He also witnessed the limp and uninterested response. Just look at Isaiah chapter 7, verses 10 to 16. Again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or in the highest heights. But Ahaz said, I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test. Then Isaiah said, Hear now, you house of David. Is it not enough to try the patience of humans? Will you also try the patience of my God? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and will call him Emmanuel. He will be eating curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. For before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and know and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid waste. Isaiah's trust in God here meets with Ahaz's complete disregard of God. Not wanting to put God to the test, he doesn't even approach him when he has worries and issues. Isaiah does not waste time on Ahaz. Instead, he is concerned for the household of God, and God gives him visions of a future where a remnant shall remain. Those who look to God for their salvation would find it in him. Isaiah lived in an end time. He saw threats and decay all around, and yet he kept his heart firmly fixed on God. He knew that salvation would not come from the Assyrians, the Egyptians, not even from a king who couldn't care less for God. No, salvation would ever only come from God. Ahaz was such a bad king, and so he died aged 36. He wasn't laid rest where the kings usually were laid to rest. So bad was he. And along comes Hezekiah, Ahaz's son. Had he also been passed through the fire in some pagan sacrifice? Quite possibly. Hezekiah was the Messiah of that age. 2 Chronicles 29 tells us how he repaired and then opened the doors of the temple so that he and the people could once again worship God. He looked to turn the people back to God. We sometimes think and maybe hope that now that I have prayed about something, God will work out a solution, make whatever it is go away. But really, from reading God's word, we know that he doesn't work that way. Yes, he wants us to bring our troubles and worries and also our hopes and endeavors before him. He wants us to acknowledge him. He wants us to acknowledge him in our life. He wants us to acknowledge him in our life as the God that he is. But we have to accept that God knows best. His salvation may look different to our desire. Hezekiah had to suffer the Assyrian invasion, and then he also had to suffer an illness that nearly killed him. And yet, in both circumstances, God provided salvation. The Lord provides. He wants our faith to be real, and we do well in believing that He indeed knows best. In Hezekiah, Israel had a vision of a king who knew how to turn to God, but he was not the Messiah. He showed his failings when, after all the hardships, he failed to deal with flattery. He showed the Babylonian envoy all the riches of his kingdom. His kingdom? But let's go back to Isaiah. Throughout all of this, Isaiah is there talking with any king who cares to listen. He writes down prophecies of warnings and also prophecies of future redemption. This is a known pattern from probably all the prophets. But in Isaiah, we do get the most vivid images and some of the most beautiful poetry. Reading Isaiah draws you into the situation he is describing. Isaiah lived through troubling times. Surely men's hearts were failing them for fear, just the same as the last days are predicted to feel like. Isaiah lived in a kind of end time. We live in some kind of end time, and that's mainly taken from political commentators who just can't see how the world can disentangle itself from the mess we have made of it all. Our time is looking for a Messiah. But our time, your and my time, we can sense how it would be nice if he came and sorted this out. So, do we live in the end times? Well, we live in our own end times. We have our own lifetime to come to believe that only God can truly bring about salvation. Isaiah saw that salvation. He was given prophecies by God, which he shared with us, prophecies of warning and prophecies of hope. Isaiah, whose name is basically the same as Jesus, Joshua, God saves, he was the voice in his time, calling out to remind himself and anyone who would listen that God is the one true God, and only he can truly bring about salvation. Isaiah saw God's salvation, but only in the visions he received from God. We hold these visions in our hands and can also take strength and encouragement from them. And we can do so even more as we see how in Jesus this salvation is now so much closer. Isaiah chapter 61, verses 1 to 3. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, and to provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. These were the words Jesus read out in that synagogue. This is your king speaking. This is my king speaking. This is the son of David, come to sit on that throne like none of his forefathers ever could have. This is the king who truly will bring salvation to his people. He said this when he first came, and he lived this every day. When he comes again, his kingdom will be established fully, and we have all been invited to take part in this. It's an invitation almost too good to be true, and many, many will reject and dismiss it. Only a remnant will care to listen and respond. God has always known. And so we are here this morning because we have heard the call. Like Isaiah, we can live in a world of turmoil, but still find hope and peace in the knowledge that God is working out his salvation. Here this morning, let us remember Jesus in how he came and showed us all this wonderful salvation. And let us remember that he has promised to return and set up the kingdom of God.